All right. 1 Corinthians chapter 4. And we're going to pick up at verse 14, only because it was 14 or 15. We'll pick up at 14. Verse 8? Oh, you know what? You're right. You're right. It was verse 8. I put a little check mark there. Jenny, you're fired. She's fired. As the verse keeper. But I think I quoted. Yeah, I quoted, and it made me think I was further than we were. So, but we will pick it up at verse 8. And Paul's writing to the Corinthians. He says, "Now ye are full, now ye are rich. Ye have reigned as kings without us, and I would to God ye did reign, that we also might reign with you." And they thought they were in a good spiritual spot, the Corinthians. And that was because of their pride. You know, most religions think, you know what, they have the answer. And most assemblies would think they're more spiritual than they really are. Yeah, that's why we say that. You need to come to my church. Because we need to teach you a few things, and you come to my church and we'll get you all straightened out. And that's what the Corinthians were, in their pride, they thought they were spiritual because they had the gifts. And you remember, weeks ago we said, how can a person be spiritual and yet not spiritual? When Paul said, "I cannot speak unto you as unto spiritual." And yet they had the gifts. They had spiritual gifts. And I was talking to a guy, I think it was Friday, it was about something that had to do with marriage. And I said, the problem with believers is, even though God gives us instruction for practical things, we think that everything is about us. We think the Bible was written just for us. It has nothing to do with it. This is God's history laid out in here, that He's doing something and you just happen to be on the program and He gives you some instruction how to operate, how to function as a believer, but we think everything is written for us. I say why I say that, and I don't want to get too far into this, but he called me, he asked me, he says, "What do you think about adultery as from the Old Testament compared to the New Testament?" And I said, I'm just saying, he said, I was talking to this lady, and, you know, everybody has problems in marriage, and I know some believers who are stuck in marriage because they feel like the Lord doesn't like divorce, and this man, you know, he's committing adultery on his wife, and she's stuck there, and she wants to leave, and what do you say? And but the thing that came to my mind is, and it sounds kind of funny, but when the Lord is giving us those instructions, it's almost incidental. And the reason I say that is because of this, and we're going to get off of that because I don't want to get into all that tonight. I'm already into it, but I want to stay on it. When God talks about marriage in the Old Testament, he's talking about the nation as a whole. He gives and it's kind of like a simile. Like, for example, he told Hosea, "You go take a wife out of whoredom." And he said, just look at Hosea. I ain't let you read it because I'll misquote it. Let's see. That's Daniel, Hosea, Joel. Am I right?
Yeah.
I am? No, I was thinking of the verse in my mind. Yeah, that's it. Chapter 3. Yeah. I was going by memory. Yeah, well, yeah, you know what? Yeah, that's good. One is good, and three is better. Yeah. Hosea chapter 1, and look at verse 2. He says, "The beginning of the word of the Lord by Hosea. And the Lord said to Hosea, go take thee a wife of whoredoms, and the children of whoredoms, for the land hath committed great whoredom, departing from the Lord." Hello there. So you see that verse? He says, go take thee a wife of whoredoms and children of whoredoms, for the land hath committed great whoredom. What land is he talking about?
Israel.
Jerusalem. They committed what?
Whoredom.
Okay. Now look over to chapter 3. He says, then said the Lord unto me, this is Hosea speaking, go yet, love a woman beloved of her friend, yet an adulteress, according to the love of the Lord toward the children of Israel, who look to other gods and love flagons of wine. So I bought her to me for 15 pieces of silver, and for an omer of barley, and half of omer of barley. And I said unto her, thou shalt abide for me many days, thou shalt not play the harlot, and thou shalt not be for another man, so will I also be for thee. And he says, for the children of Israel shall abide many days without a king, without a prince, without a sacrifice, and without an image, without an ephod, and without a teraphim. Afterward shall the children of Israel return and seek the Lord their God. And David their king shall fear the Lord and his goodness in the latter days. Now, it might be a little bit hard to understand, but he's comparing the marriage relationship with his relationship with Israel. So that's why he'll tell Hosea to go and do this, because when you do this, this is a object lesson for the nation. And that's what he does with them. And you'll read back there, and he says, I put away Israel. I've given her a bill of divorcement because she went after other gods. She committed idolatry. She committed spiritual adultery and spiritual fornication with other gods. So when I said usually when people look at it, we're so self-centered that we can't see God's big picture for the fact that you think he's talking about you, just you. He said, well, this is what he wants me to, and yet his relationship, the marriage, is indicative of how he's relating to his people. Okay, let me say this. Moses said this. Jesus came and said, Moses said this. You could put her away. Why? Look at this. Look at Deuteronomy.
Let me ask you a question about this before you go in.
Okay.
Verse 4. Is this talking about the time
the That's right leading up to that.
Okay.
That's right at the edge of that. And when they do come back, then that's, you'll see that's prophesied in Isaiah, in Ezekiel, Jeremiah. It prophesies about the Lord taking them back, taking his... You know what's funny? I said I wasn't going to spend a lot of time on that. In Genesis, where you see that it starts off with a marriage, even though it doesn't say marriage. Mm-hmm. What happens in Revelation?
Marriage.
He says, come and see what?
The bride.
Who is that?
The Lamb of the Lamb.
And he showed me the
great city.
Mm-hmm. And most, if you get, that's why I was telling him, I say, if you get stuck on the just you, you're not that, I don't say not that significant. It's not just about you. We like to think it's all about us. And we don't think that God is actually doing something and we're just in on his purpose. I know I'm not explaining that right, but...
this morning when I was studying, it kind of in a similar thing, and I was reading the verse where the Lord laments over Jerusalem. He says, oh, Jerusalem, Jerusalem, how I would have gathered you, you know, but you would not. And he's talking about the people, but he's lamenting over the city.
Right. And that's where, if you look at it, you look at it as, even though it's a, he's talking, okay, I'll give you another example before we get to Deuteronomy. When he meets the, when Jesus comes in Matthew chapter 5, and he says, in old time you've heard this, that thou shalt not commit adultery. And the Pharisees say, well, I don't commit adultery. But he said this, but I say, that if you look at her with lust in your heart, you've already done it. Why would he say that? Because they were self-righteous, and we keep the law. We're in the temple. We keep the Sabbath. All the, right. That's why Isaiah prophesied, he said this, bring your offering. He said, you'll make a sacrifice, and to me, it's like you put a pig on the altar. Swine. Because Romans, Paul sums it up. He says this. He says, Israel did not obtain that which he seeketh for. Why not? He sought it not by faith, but as it were, by the works of the law. So when Jesus comes, they're doing it. They're doing the rituals, but guess what's not there? The heart. And that's why he says, if you look at her, because I got to get past the outside, I got to get in there and let you know that I know that you don't want me. So he heightens it up, so they will have to say, you know what? I'm an adulterer. Because the nation, you know what he called them? You are a generation of vipers, an evil and adulterous generation. That's what he said. He said, an evil and an adulterous generation seeketh after a sign. Okay, I know that's... I'm gonna stop right there because that's not what the lesson is about.
He permitted, but it wasn't a commandment. Oh, man, Deuteronomy 24, whatever it is.
Let me ask you a question. No, it's not hard at all. Can you obtain righteousness through the law?
No.
Okay. How do you know that? Okay. So when God says this, if you offend in one point, how many have you offended in? Okay. So by the works of the law, there's none righteous, no, not one. The law, by the law, is the what?
Knowledge
of sin. So when Moses comes, that's why he said this. Moses, you could put away your wife. Look at Deuteronomy. What is that? Deuteronomy 24?
about Israel building the horse and she doesn't marry another man, and him put her out.
Yeah,
you know, that's the law of divorce.
Yeah, it's 24. Well, it's 24. What I want the first part of it, though. Deuteronomy 24. Mm-hmm. That's fast, isn't it? 24:1. When a man hath taken a wife and married her, and it come to pass that she find no favor in his eyes, because he hath found some uncleanness in her, then let him write her a bill of divorcement, and give it her in her hand, and send her out of his house. And when she is departed out of his house, she may go and be another man's wife. And if the latter husband hate her, and write her a bill of divorcement, and giveth it in her hand, and sendeth her out of his house, or if the latter husband die, which took her to be his wife, her former husband, which sent her away, what? What is the Lord doing divorcing Israel and taking her back?
Making her jealous?
Oh, he's not making her jealous. I mean, this is the picture, what I'm saying here. Moses said, don't do it.
Don't take her back.
Don't take her back. But God, in his graciousness, even under the old covenant, he says, go do this, and then he says, I'm going to let you know, I'm going to take you back.
But it's still a
divorce, and that's just the law. It's a separation paper. Yeah, it's a literal separation paper. But what I want to look at is this. He said, if he sees any uncleanness in you, he could do what? Okay. How? What does the law show in you? And that's what the relationship in Israel, they always wanted to function under the law. And every time they came up to God, they were what?
Unclean.
And he could put them away for any transgression under the law. Under the law, when they sinned, they died without mercy under two or three witnesses. That's under the law. Under the performance, your fleshly performance. That's why God can say to Moses, if you see anything wrong with her, you can put her away.
Just like God did
with Israel.
He comes back and remarries in Revelation.
Because you know what he does? He cleans her up. He takes her back.
As long as she hasn't taken another man's name.
Oh yeah, the man.
She's been with many lovers, he said in Ezekiel. She's been with many lovers. Israel and Judah. But God is so gracious. Even under the old covenant, he makes it, that's why the new, remember you talking about the new covenant a couple of weeks ago? That's why he makes the new covenant. Because he says, then you will be my sons and daughters, and I'll be a God unto you, I'll be a father to you. Whereas before they weren't.
They couldn't take them back into the old covenant? He had to.
He had to make them acceptable.
Yeah.
So,
which isn't going to happen until after the tribulation.
All that. All.
The time that they can't take the other man's name. They have to do it.
All that. Right. All that. But it's all back there.
Yeah.
Now, I'll say this and we move on. Under grace, Paul said this. He says, in Ephesians, I'll just quote it. He says, for this cause, he said, you know, a man and should leave his father, mother, and cleave to his wife. And then he talks about, he said, well, look at Ephesians. Ephesians 5.
This is
the what?
This is the great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church.
What's a great mystery? Ephesians 5.
If we're members of his body, and we're certainly not the God. But that's the verse that
used to
say,
which is Ephesians. Ephesians chapter 5. 21. Start at verse 21. He says, submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of God. Wives, submit yourselves unto your own husbands as unto the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, even as, that's the simile. This is like this. He's the head of you, even as Christ is what? The head of the church, and he is the Savior of the body. Therefore, as the church is subject unto Christ, so let the wives be to their own husbands in everything. You see, that even under grace, he says, look, this marriage is like this. Christ and the church. You are representative, you and your wife are representative of this. Ed and Annette, he says, your marriage is representative of what? Christ and the church. So you, as the church, be subject to the head. The church should be subject to? Right, to Christ. Okay. He says, husbands, love your wives even as Christ also loved the church and gave himself for it. That's why he's, well, we are not even over there. Corinthians, Paul said this. He says, this I say, not me, but the Lord. He says, if a man have a wife, if a woman is married, don't leave. And if a husband, if you have a wife, don't put her away. You can't put her away. He said, you can't put her away. Why? He doesn't elaborate on it there, but he elaborates on the relationship here. In Corinthians chapter 7, where he's talking about all these scenarios that they came up with, and he said, if you leave, let her remain or be reconciled to her husband. You'll see nothing about the husband. You can put her away for any reason you want to. Not under grace you can't, because guess what God doesn't do to us? Put us away for any reason, our shortcomings. You better be glad he doesn't. We are. Because he said this, husbands, love your wives even as Christ loved the church and gave himself for it, that he might sanctify and cleanse it with the washing of water by the word, that he might present it to himself a what?
Glorious church.
Not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, but that it should be holy and without blemish. So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. You think Christ loves his body? What do you call Christ's body? Us? What do you call Christ's body?
Church.
The church. You think he loves the church? How do you know he loves the church? That's not it. That's not it. That's not just it. He just died for the church. That's not it. That's not all. That's not all. You just read it. You just read it. You just read it. What? He gave us the Holy Spirit. You know what? That helps sanctify us. And what? Cleanse us.
So that we're not adulterers.
You know what? He wants his love to draw you in. Like Paul said, the love of Christ, what? Constrain me. He said this. He says that he might present it to himself a glorious church, not having spot or wrinkle or any such thing, So ought men to love their wives as their own bodies. He that loveth his wife loveth himself. For no man ever yet hated his own flesh, but nourisheth it, and what?
Cherisheth
it. Look. What does the next part say? Even as what? The Lord, the church. For, he's going to explain it. We are what? Members of his body, of his flesh, and of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they two shall be one flesh. This is a great mystery, but I speak concerning Christ and the church. You know what's amazing? He said this. How could you, Blake and Jenny, be two separate individuals, and yet God says you're one flesh? You know what? When God brought Eve to Adam, and he looked, he said, this is bone of my bones, flesh of my flesh, because she was taken out of his side. And he says, and they will cleave to each other. Well, that's the intimate relationship, when they cleave together and they become one flesh. And then God said, he says, this is the day, in the day where he called their name Adam. And he says, I speak concerning Christ and the church. You know how close we are, what? We are members of his body. The moment we believe, we become what? One with him.
And each other.
That's why you can't, and with each other, right. You can't lose your salvation. There's no way possible that you cannot get out of Christ. We're one with him. Now, if you took that same thought into a marriage, if you took it like God took it, believers, I'm not talking about the world. I'm talking about if believers look at marriage the way God wanted us to look at marriage, you will know, you will say, you know what? She may not be right all the time, but she's the right one for me. Why? Because I would look at it because God looks at it. If he loves you when you were an enemy and wicked in your mind by wicked works, alienated from him, and he gave himself when you were in that state, how much more do you think he loves you now that you accept him, trust him? Let me give you another worldly example. Suppose you took a harlot off the street. You got her off the bricks, off the pavement, and you said, look, I want to do for you like no other man has done for you. I want to support you. I want to love you. And she said, I don't believe that. And you say, trust me. And she marries you. You take her home. Then what is she going to expect? For you to deliver. And you know what? If you deliver, how do you think she'll feel about that? Oh man, of course. Where you been all my life, right? She won't know. That's great. But that's where we fall down as believers is, number one, I don't think we go to the marriage relationship understanding what it means. I didn't. I'm reading the verses all the time. I read them, quote them, but I didn't know what it meant because I felt like, I tell these guys, they call, you know what I said, we're going to dwell on that. The guys they call and say, I want to leave. Like, I do too. I had days where I want to leave. I'm thinking this, look, what things know a man?
Except for me.
Save the spirit of man that's in him. there's no secret. I'm not the Lord. He says you should do it as to the Lord. That's something to grow to. So you wake up, you're going to wake up one day and like, break.
You better lie.
But the thing is that when I said, you know why you want to leave? Because you're selfish. That's why you want to leave. Because you're selfish. And what you mean? Look, what the law did was what? What did the law do? Reveal what? Your sinfulness. What else? What did it do for the person who wanted to keep the law? What did it do for them?
Showed them they couldn't.
Showed them they couldn't? What the law did? It puts you on a performance. You do this, and I'll do this. You do this, and I'll do this. If you do this, I'll do that. Right. So, really what the law did, you know what the law did? The law did this. The law made you love. It made you love. You could never do it. So I tell a guy, I says, you a believer? So you believe? Yeah, he said, I'm a believer. I said, you believe this book? I believe the book. Your wife saved? Yeah, my wife saved. You saved? Yeah, I'm saved. Number one, do you think that the Lord is incompatible with the Holy Spirit?
No.
Huh? Okay. Why not? They're one. They want the same thing, don't they? So I said, number one, before you fall out with her and you she fall, somebody is what? Somebody is operating in the flesh.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, how do you solve that problem? Go back to the spirit. Where is that? Go back to what?
The word.
Go back to the word. Go back to the word, and you know what the word's going to do? The word's going to send you back, huh? The word's going to send you back to him. And he's going to say what? Ephesians 5, Frank. That's what he's going to say. Am I right? And then you got another decision to make. You know what? I'll get to this guy in a minute, but I used to sit down, and I would be reading through the passages, you know, other passages. And I'm not, it wasn't audible, but the Lord, he would say, and I'm saying this by accommodation so you understand what I'm saying. The Lord would say, I don't know why you're reading that. You're like, why are you trying to figure it out? It's like, I don't know why you read that. You need to be reading Ephesians chapter 5. That's what you need to be doing. So you know what? You're like, ah. You know how those cartoons, you shake it off, and you'd be over there, it'd be another day, and he says, I told you, you don't need to be over there, you need to be in Ephesians chapter 5. And I was like, you know what? Because what I was doing was operating in the flesh, had my wife on a performance, telling her, if you do this, then I'll do this. And yet, you know what? You preaching, teaching, talking about the love of Christ, talking about grace, how great it is, and yet, where it really counts, where you really display it, you're a failure. Because if you don't know a man, you know what? Just pull his wife to the side and say, tell me something about it. Tell me something about him, and you hope you're in earshot so you can say, don't talk about that. Because you know you're rotten. You know that.
If you tell that, I'll tell that.
Yeah. You, you know why? Let's see, you know what? You have to admit that. You have to admit that. So I tell this guy, I said, if you want your wife, look at this verse. He said this. Verse, the Ephesians. Ephesians 5. He says, He gave himself. Yeah, you think about that. He gave himself, right? If you give yourself to another person, what would you be classified as?
A martyr.
A what?
A martyr.
Very close.
Yeah.
That's good. I like that.
A servant.
So, first thing is, you say, well, prove that. How do you know that you have to become a servant?
Let this mind be in you that was also in Christ.
What did he do?
He humbled himself.
And did what? Took upon him the form of a servant. So you say this. I'm not doing that.
It's not just a husband.
You're right. You say, I'm not doing that. And he says, okay. Be ready for trouble. But he says, look, he says, 25, love your wives as Christ loves it. You know what? That's not an emotion. That's not an emotion. Where you wake up and you say, you know what? I just don't feel like I love you. What does that mean? You think Christ wakes up and he says, I just don't feel like I love them today.
Yeah, about that.
You know what? That's what I'm saying. It's all in the approach where you don't think like God thinks. You don't have his terminology. We have the world's terminology. When we use love, we look like this. We say, we think of love.
L-U-V,
right. We, right. What? No, we think of this.
Eros.
Yes. Because we just that shallow. And you know, base. Because we, you know what? The minute I stop feeling good, that's what we really think about. The minute I stop feeling good, I don't love her no more. But love is this. Love is that's I'll show you this. Look at this. Look at Corinthians chapter. You know what? I ain't gonna fool with that. No. This I'm already down the road. But
well, can I ask a complicated question?
Okay.
A way to tee it up.
Okay.
How do we look at a second marriage?
Okay, that's a great question, because that's the thing of grace is this. One of my good friends, he was younger than a lot younger than me, but when they grow up, you know, they almost peers. I'm about maybe 15 years older than him, but he's one that got a divorce. And he says, we got in the car, we went for about 2 hour drive. And everybody like, talk to him. I was like, okay. He got in the car and we started riding and I said, tell me what's going on. He says, usually, you know what, when people look for help, usually the bottom has fell out. They don't do things proactively. It's always reactive. And by that time, you know what, because you're so selfish, all you have in your mind is me. I want this. I need him. It has nothing to do with giving. Everybody takes. Everybody takes. They don't realize when he says submitting yourselves one to another. You know what that means? I got to get up under you. See, the guy will say this, you should submit to me. He never reads the next verse. The first verse, he never reads it. Submitting yourselves one to another in the fear of the Lord. He never reads that. It's always, I'm the head and I run this house. I don't do that, by the way. I'm just saying. But to answer your question is this. If a man under grace, he puts away his wife. Okay? What has he really done? He put her to the side. What's that?
Besides become single,
right. In that instance, in that guidance, he has walked away from the Lord's His will is for you to reflect the same relationship that he has with the church. Listen, if God would put us away for our performance, none of us would be saved. That's why I said that God, when you approach it, he is not thinking of it like the Lord. We don't think like he thinks about this. So by being under grace, is the simple answer is this: nothing happens. You just got a divorce. You failed him in that area. He's not going to hold that over your head. And you got a divorce. You failed. What's the difference of me divorcing my wife or me staying married on paper and cheating on her? What's the difference?
None.
Are you sure?
Divorce is more honest.
Yeah. It's either way, you're just a selfish old rotten rascal, right?
That's
what I'm saying. So, you know what? That's why I told him when he got in the car, I said, listen, they will not let you live this down for a couple of months.
Yeah.
For a couple of months. I said, so you have to get ready. You will be mud for about 2 to 4 months if you want to do this. You know what I think about this. I'm not your Lord. I'm your brother. You know you're wrong. You know it can be fixed. What you are deciding to do is just based on your flesh. Your flesh wants to do whatever. I'm not concerned about that. I said, you know all the verses. This ride is not even necessary. So, I said, but if you want to do that, I won't look at you any less other than the fact that you failed his grace. And I'm a little disappointed that you didn't come earlier. Like nobody has problems in marriage. Like, when does that stop? When does it stop? I've been married 21 years. When does it stop? So, but you have to have somebody, like I said, who's spiritual enough where you can go to in confidence and say, listen, I'm having this issue. How do I work this out? So, if he divorced her, how many churches you think full of saved people divorced?
All of them.
Some of them. I mean, you know, some divorces. I'm not saying one couple, one divorce. I'm saying one couple, one person, maybe two or three divorces. You mean God ain't here? He can't get this right? We're believers? Somebody's operating in the flesh. That's all it is. The thing is, though, we are the ones who we make it the unpardonable sin. He can't be saved. He got divorced. Oh, ain't no way he could be saved. Like, wait a minute. Why are you making this bigger than the Lord makes it?
Because they turned back here.
Because they turned back in the Old Testament. Because they put you on a performance. You're on a performance. Until it's us. Now, when it's us, then it's a whole different story. Like, well, you don't know what she did. Like Adam, you know what? Just what Adam, when the Lord finds out they went haywire, he said, "What did you do?" He didn't ask her. He didn't ask Eve. He said, "Blake, what did you do?" And Blake, being selfish, he said,
"That woman saved me.
It's her fault." No accountability to God. That's where the thing breaks down. Back to the original thought. I told the guy, I said, "Listen, you want your marriage to work because you want it better." I said, "Why don't you make up your mind that you're going to do what the Lord wants?" He said, "You know what he told me? We go to church." That's what he said.
We attend a gathering in a building.
I went to church every Sunday and Wednesday and Saturday and Sunday night. But I wasn't doing that. So I said, you have to make up your mind that you will become a servant to your wife.
He said, "What?"
He got quiet. I said, "Did you hear me?" He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "You know what a servant is, don't you?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "You have to make up your mind that you're going to become a servant to your wife." And he said, How could I be a servant and still run my house?" I said, "How could the Lord be a savior and still be the head of the body?" I said, "What?
Servant
leadership." I said, "Your definition of servant is not God's definition of servant. And your definition of head is not God's definition of head. His definition of head is this." He said, "He nourisheth and cherisheth it." If you nourish it, what are you doing?
Giving it what it needs.
To do what?
To grow.
And to flourish. If you cherish it, cherish is the word where we get the word want from.
That's
cherish. You know what? I'll give you a good example of this. Well, to me it's a good example. When a chicken lays on the egg, that's cherishing it. And that heat from her body is incubating that egg. That's what he said. He said, "You know what? Cherish her. Warm her up. Warm her up." And that's where I had to look. I looked those words up when the Lord told me. I don't know why you're reading that. I said, "You know what? I'm going to do what you said do, Lord. I'm going to go over here and I'm going to read this passage." And I read that passage. And I said, "You know what?" I was like Josiah. I had to fall down and say, "You know what? I've been a rotten husband." He said, "I was doing it up here. I was doing it from my perspective of what a husband should be." And I just had to tell my wife, I said, "You know what? I'm sorry that you went through this long. She probably like, what is he talking about? But I knew. And I said, this is what I want to do. Had nothing to do with you do your part and I do my part. This is what I've done. This is where I failed. I failed you for this many years. This is what I want to do. I'm not saying I'm going to be perfect, but I know now this is what I need to do, what the Lord wants me to do. And it had nothing to do with, if you keep your end of the bargain, I'm going to keep my end of the bargain. And it's been a process for me. For those, from the time I realized it to now. It is still a process where you are learning how to love. Like you said, it ain't easy. You know what? A woman has to learn how to be submissive. They got opinions, and sometimes they're better than yours. But you, so close-minded, you think you're always right. You're not always right. And the process is for your mind to be transformed, not for you to try to transform somebody else's mind. That's what we want to do. We want to transform the other person, not us. It doesn't work like that. So we're going to time. Let's go back to Corinthians.
Labeled as married.
Just
really.
We'll pick up Corinthians.
First eight.
Next week, Friday.